Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Hey, good morning to you. My name is Rob. I'm one of the pastors at Next Level. So honored that you're here today. And if this is your first time with us, I want to say welcome to you. And I'll let you know a little something that we do each and every week. We partner with an app. It is a free app. It's called YouVersion. And it's simply a chance for you to go to the next level with what you're about to hear. So all the scriptures that you're about to hear, they're in YouVersion on the live page. Plus, there's a place to take notes. Prayer requests, if you have a prayer request, if something's going on and you'd like our prayer team to pray for you, you can drop that in there. There's a whole bunch of fun stuff in there, question of the week, so make sure you take advantage of that. The steps are up there on the screen. And before we dive into the talk, I wanted to highlight something that happened last week. Last week, if you were here, you remember that a lot of us didn't wear shoes to church. Last week was Barefoot Sunday, and we were trying to raise awareness for the 1.3 billion people that walk every day without shoes. And for the whole month of May, we were collecting shoes and raising awareness for this great need all around our world. And last week was the last week to give. And so this week, we had a bunch of volunteers come in and count all the shoes and bag all the shoes and then deliver all the shoes. And I want to let you know the total. Our church last week had 352 people. Okay, so it gives you an idea of how many people are coming to Next Level. That includes kids, and we count pregnant people twice. So that gets you an idea. That gives you an idea of how many people we're dealing with. So around 350 people, we collected 2,136 pairs of shoes. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. And so those are going to a great cause. They're going to literally change the world. Some are staying locally, and some are going around the world, and it's gonna make a huge difference. So if you participated, thank you so much for that. And now before we dive into our text for the day, Would you take a moment just to simply just kind of quiet your heart, bestill your heart, and would you just ask God to speak to you? So often, Sundays, even though we're here and we're wanting to hear from God and we're wanting to get something fresh and hear something, so often we carry with us the burdens of the week that we just went through. And I want to give you a second just to kind of quiet your mind and just simply say, God, would you speak to me? And then would you say, would you give me the courage to do whatever you tell me to do? Because if he's going to speak, we need to obey. So would you take a few moments just to simply talk to God, and then we'll dive in. God, it's so cool that you can hear all of our prayers at the same time. And would you speak to us where we're at? God, whether we're the skeptic today or whether we're the longtime believer, would you speak to us where we're at and help us to know how to go to the next level? Would you give us the courage to do whatever you tell us to do? And we ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, today we're concluding our series entitled How to Tick Jesus Off. And the way that I wanted to include the series was I really wanted to make a point come home about what it was like for Jesus to get ticked off. And I came up with an idea to actually have like a reenactment of Jesus' most famous scene where he just really got angry. And as soon as my brain went there and I started thinking about bringing in someone that got angry, I was reminded to something that I was a part of about 7 years ago. 7 years ago, I was a part of a church, and our programming team to plan the services, we came up with an idea to kind of punk the audience, and it had to do with anger. We set up a plant in the audience to sit, and we asked him, he was an actor, and we asked him to act like he was getting angry at one of our members. Now, the member that was in on this was my mom, and we gave her a cell phone, and she had the cell phone, and she put it in her purse, and our sound guy in the back had a button that he would push that made it sound like the cell phone was ringing. And so in the middle of the talk, the cell phone starts going off, and my mom starts fidgeting in her purse, and it's like she can't find it. And this guy, who is a plant, no one knows he's a plant, but he's a plant in the audience, he yells out loud at my mom to silence her cell phone. It got really quiet and really tense. It was like, what is happening here? Well, it kept going on, and it rang a couple times, and eventually the guy got so angry that the pastor actually addressed him and told him to calm down. And the guy said, I didn't want to be here anyway, and he stands up, and he walks over, and he goes across the aisle to my mom. He grabs a cell phone out of her hand, slams it on the ground, and runs out. Now, all the Christians just stayed there. No one moved, like, no one panicked, like, literally, I don't know if they were afraid. I don't know what was going on in the Christian's mind. But there was one dude who I know was not a Christian. And he steps up and says, that ain't right. And he chases, he has no idea it's a plant, but he chases after him down the aisle and goes out in the lobby. And in the lobby, we had to grab this guy. Literally, we're bear hugging him. There's two of us on him. And we're telling him, hey, it's okay. It's a plant. He's in on it. He's an actor. And plus, he's like a third degree black belt. He will kill you. So don't. You need to calm down. You need to calm down. Now, so I had in my mind this picture of doing something kind of similar like that in here, but I know a lot of you, and I know that a lot of you really value the Second Amendment, and I started getting a little bit scared that if we did something like that, I would end up with holes all through my body, and so I just vetoed that idea, and instead, I thought I would just talk to you. It's way safer just to talk to you about a time where Jesus really got ticked off. The police officer started that clapping, by the way. This idea, though, of Jesus getting ticked off is really important, and it's important if you're a Christ follower, if you're a Christian, because as a Christian, you are called to be like Jesus. And one of Jesus' best friends, one of his closest followers, one of his disciples, wrote in one of his letters that if you're a Christian, this is what you should look like. 1 John 2:6 says this, "Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus did." So whoever claims to live in him, whoever claims to be a Christian, whoever says, I'm a follower. Now, some of you are here today and you're not a follower yet. You're not a Christian yet. You're just checking things out. That is awesome. You can check it out. You can come as many weeks as you need to check things out. But if you're here today and you would say, nope, that's me. I've signed up on the dotted line. I'm a Christian. Then John would say, if you're a Christian, you must live as Jesus did. Now, does that mean that you're perfect? No. All right, we all have flaws, but this is the goal, that we're aiming to live our lives to where we reflect and look like Jesus. Now, John, the guy that wrote that, is also the guy that included a story that is the most famous rant of Jesus. The most famous time where Jesus really got ticked off is included in John's gospel account of Jesus' life. So when John says that if you call yourself a Christian, you must live as Jesus did, he's including the stuff that ticked Jesus off. And if you're a Christian today, you need to be asking yourselves, what does Jesus get ticked off about, and why doesn't it bother me? Because if I'm following him, my life should reflect him, and I should get worried and upset and bothered by the things that upset Jesus. So this is what I need you to do, because we're going to look at, it is probably the most famous rant, it is probably the most famous moment in Jesus' life where he got angry. And I need you, especially if you're new to the church scene, if you've never heard this story before, I need you to take your imaginary seatbelt and buckle it, okay? Because we're going to go for a wild ride. This is an intense story. This is not a passive Jesus. This is a Jesus that goes buck wild angry on a group of people. And I want to let you guys know, this is what we're getting into. So with that being said, let's look at our text for the day. It's written by John, and it's covering a story where Jesus gets incredibly angry. It says, when it was almost time for the Jewish Passover. The Jewish Passover was a festival that is very similar to our Easter. Our Easter has kind of taken the place of Passover, but how Easter is a really big deal to most American Christians and Christians around the world, Passover is a really, really big deal. Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, "Get these out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market." His disciples remembered that it is written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." So Jesus walks into the courtyard of the temple, and he goes crazy, like angry. He gets really angry. Like if it's a scale of 1 to 10, he's about a 15 on this scale, okay? He pulls an Indiana Jones. He makes something out of a whip and starts whipping things, okay? And he turns over tables. And none of you look very shocked. Maybe you've heard this story a bunch. Maybe you don't know what a scene that would make. Like, this is where I wanted to do the reenactment, right? But the Second Amendment made me not do this, okay? This is the part, like, if you could see, imagine it, in a church, in the middle of a service, someone turning over tables and screaming. Like, I just want to make sure you guys get just a sample. Just imagine that in the middle of a service, someone comes in. That's one chair. You see how loud that was? Some of you got scared. Some of you, can you imagine tables with money on it? Can you imagine if one chair is that loud? Can you imagine someone turning over tables, multiple tables, and yelling and screaming? Jesus is ticked off. He is angry. And this is his most famous rant out of all the rants that he's ever had. In fact, this is the one that is known as the cleansing of the temple. And one thing that makes this significant is that this story is found in all four of the Gospels. There's four accounts that tell of Jesus' life, and each of the authors does not include everything that would happen in Jesus' life. Some of them have some stories that the others don't cover, but this rant, this time where Jesus gets this upset, it's covered in all four Gospels. And John says that he is incredibly, incredibly ticked off. This is so famous, it's actually been painted by lots of people throughout history. And I want to show you an image of exactly what this looks like. It's different than that image. This is one of the most famous paintings of Jesus cleansing the temple. He's got a whip in his hand. And do you notice how afraid everyone is? Like, they're scared. This is not Jesus, like, just walking in and saying, hey, guys, we need to talk. This is him really causing a scene. He's knocking off tables. And I don't know if you guys see this or not, but I kind of see something else that the text doesn't say. If that painting is accurate, I think Jesus got ticked off because so many guys showed up to church in togas. I'm just throwing that out there. Like, some of those guys have no clothes on. This is awkward. And that ticked Jesus off. And he has a whip, and he's turning over tables. This was a huge, massive, massive scene. Now, in order for us to fully get why Jesus is so upset, we've got to go back a few thousand years and insert ourselves into the Jewish customs and the Jewish practices. The temple that Jesus went into, the literal word in Hebrew for temple is Bet Yahweh. And Bet Yahweh means house of the Lord. So the temple was very different than our churches because there was only one temple. There was only one house of the Lord. And the Jews believed that God told them to build a house for God, that his presence was everywhere, but his presence especially dwelled in the temple. It was a special place on earth. And when Passover came, thousands of people from around the world would travel to Jerusalem to get to the temple. They didn't have temples on every corner. They didn't have temples where they lived. There was one religious temple that they had to get to. Now, the reason the temple was so important is because the only way to have your sins forgiven was to take a spotless animal, most likely a lamb, a sheep, and sacrifice that animal. To take an animal and sacrifice it, and it had to be done at the temple. Okay, just stick with me on this. I am what you would call a meatitarian. I love meat. I enjoy meat. I love eating meat. I would eat meat 3 times a day if I could. But it would gross me out if I showed up to church and all throughout the lobby, people were sacrificing little cute baby lambs, right? Imagine how different your church experience would be. Nasty, right? Like, you're like guarding your kids' eyes. You're like, I don't know what's going on here. This is a bloodbath. This is disgusting. Like, gross, right? Now, the question is, why don't we do that today? Because if that was something that Jesus participated in, and Jesus went to the temple around Passover to see this happen, why don't we participate in this today? Well, the reason is because Jesus became the spotless lamb. And what for years and centuries the Jews practiced by sacrificing a lamb, Jesus literally became that. And when he died on a cross, he was sinless, and all of our sin went on him. And so no longer do we have to sacrifice cute little baby sheep at church. We can now take Jesus, and he covers us, and he covers our sin. Thank Jesus. Like, literally, thank him. It would be so nasty to walk in here sacrificing animals. The reason we don't do that literally is because of Jesus' sacrifice. This temple, though, this is incredibly important because this temple, because there was only one place to really worship God, people, when they came to the temple, they couldn't carry their spotless lamb with them. Like, just imagine, today we have cars, we would have trailers, it would be easier to travel with animals, but back then, if you're on donkey or you're on foot or you're on horseback or camel, and you've got to carry a spotless lamb across country, a lot of things could happen to him. He could get injured, something, you know, you could travel, it'd be hard for you to carry in your arms. There's a lot of things that could happen. So lots of people who were coming from thousands of places all around the place to come to the temple did not bring their spotless lamb or their spotless animal to sacrifice, but they still had sin that needed to be cleansed. So they would walk into the courtyard of the temple. And in the courtyard of the temple was an area where people were selling animals, all sorts of animals. Specifically, though, they were selling doves. And because this was the only place to get a sacrificial animal, and because people were there to get their sins forgiven, they had to buy the animals that the religious leaders were selling. This is a really big deal, because the religious leaders were gouging the prices. They were raising the prices. There wasn't like a Walmart on the outskirts of town that sold like wholesale sacrificial animals. Like, the only place to get your animal was in the temple, and they were raising the price, and they were making it so hard for people to have their sins forgiven. Not only that, but they had said that the Roman currency, they were under Roman law, they had said that the Roman currency wasn't holy enough to buy a sacrificial animal. So they created a temple coin. It was only a coin that you could get in the temple, and you had to pay a price for the temple coin in order to buy the animal that would be sacrificed for your sins. And they were making bank. They were making a lot of money off of it. Jesus walks in, and he gets ticked off. Now, typically, in the church world, we have taken that verse to say that that means that Jesus doesn't ever want church people to sell anything in the church. And typically, we've seen that like Jesus got upset because they were selling something, and so we should never sell something. And a handful of years ago, I was a part of a service where we had brought in one of the top 20 contestants from American Idol, back when the show was in its prime, and she had made the top 20, and she was actually on the show, and we'd brought her in to sing in our services. And after the services, she sold in the lobby her CD, which was a Christian CD, and she sold it for like $8. It was like 5 songs for $8 or something like that. And we got multiple emails from people who told us that it was offensive that we had her sell her CD in the church. And they quoted this verse. Because this, it is obvious that Jesus gets ticked off. If you sell anything in the church, Girl Scout cookies, you sell, I mean, anything, Jesus is going to come and he's going to get ticked off. But I don't think Jesus got ticked off because they sold something in the church. And if we look at another translation, another version of this exact same event, I think we'll see a key that helps us know exactly why Jesus got so upset. Let's look at what Mark, another one of the authors, says about this exact same event. It's just a different take on it. It says, on reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple courts and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, is it not written, my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers. So make sure you're sticking with this. Did you see why Jesus got upset? It wasn't just because they were selling something. It was because they had made it a den of robbers. And Jesus gets incredibly upset. But there's more to the story than even what first meets the eye. Jesus quotes someone in this text. He literally, there's quotes around it that he is quoting someone. And if you were Jewish, you would know exactly who he was quoting. But since I'm not Jewish, I had to Google it. Like, who is he quoting? What is this? That is an incredibly important question. Thank you for asking it. Who is Jesus quoting? Jesus is quoting a guy by the name of Isaiah. And Isaiah may not mean a lot to you, but Isaiah was a guy who prophesied. He predicted the future of what the Messiah was going to look like. And the incredible thing about Isaiah is everything that Isaiah said about the Messiah, Jesus fulfilled. And so it makes sense why most of the time when Jesus quoted something, he quoted from Isaiah. And in this instance, after Jesus calms down, he quotes Isaiah. We're going to look at it again. It's going to come up on the screen. He says, is it not written? So it's written somewhere. My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers. So Jesus there is quoting Isaiah. And I want to take us back and actually look at Isaiah to see the context of a few verses before and a verse after to see exactly what Isaiah was talking about. Because in this context, we're going to understand what Jesus was really angry about. And this is so important for you, because if this made Jesus angry, it should also make you angry. So let's look at Isaiah and see what Isaiah has to say. He says this, and foreigners who bind themselves to the Lord to minister to him, to the love of the name of the Lord and to be his servants, all who keep the Sabbath without desecrating it and who hold fast to my covenant, these I will bring to my holy mountain and give them joy in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and sacrifices will be accepted on my altar, for my house will be called a house of prayer for all nations. That's what Jesus quoted. My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations. The sovereign Lord declares, he who gathers the exiles of Israel, I will gather still others to them besides those already gathered. So what is going on here? Well, Isaiah was prophesying that God was going to do a new thing. And the new thing was he was going to take a religion that was strictly with Jews, and he was going to open up the borders and open things up so that those that were not Jewish could worship the one true God. And so if you're not Jewish today, they would have called you a Gentile, and they would have looked down upon you. You wouldn't have had the same rights and responsibilities that a Jew had. And so this was like radical teaching. And Isaiah said that God, he's quoting God here, that God has a heart for the nations. And he's going to turn this temple into a place that not only Jews can come to, but also the Gentiles, those who don't have a relationship with God, those who we see as dirty, as exiles, as not welcome, there's going to be a place for them to come and worship. So in Jesus' day, when the temple was built, was really restored and built, it was a massive building. The temple was on 35 acres. Make sure that you hear that. 35 acres. Most of the time when I see a picture of the temple, it just looks like a little room, kind of maybe like this, and Jesus is just dealing with a few people. But 35 acres the temple sat on. And it had a huge colonnade, a huge wall that went around the temple. And you would enter into the wall, and there was a section around the temple. It wasn't the actual temple. It was a section around the temple, and it was called the Court of Gentiles. I want to show you a picture of this, the Court of Gentiles. So this is, just to put in perspective, this is the temple. If you look all around it, those are like houses and things. It lets you know how big the temple really is. And you would walk through the wall, and the temple is that white building with the big pillars in the middle that has another wall around it. And on the outside of the temple was the Court of Gentiles. And this is what that meant, that the Jews had allowed Gentiles, those who were not born of the Jewish faith, to enter into the courtyard, but they weren't allowed into the temple. It was as if to say, this is your place that we're going to fulfill the prophecy of Isaiah. You can come and gather here. You can pray here, but you can't get to the temple. The temple was reserved for only special select people. And the closer you got to the temple, the more holy you had to be, the more special you had to be. And so Gentiles were not allowed to go into the temple. They could just go into the courtyard. And the text says over and over again that Jesus entered the courtyard. So where that arrow is, that's where Jesus is when he gets upset. He's not in the actual temple. He's in the courtyard. He's in the area where it should be filled with Gentiles who are praying. But instead of finding Gentiles and misfits and those who do not belong praying, he finds a bunch of religious people who are selling things. And there's no room for the misfits and the outcasts to come and worship God. And because the Jews could make a profit off of it, they've set up merchant tables, and they've pushed out all the Gentiles, and they've said, we can make some money off of this. And Jesus walks in, and he expects to find some misfits and outcasts and some people that are messy and don't have their life together. Instead, he finds a bunch of religious people who are pretending to be perfect, and they're selling things to other Jews. And this ticks Jesus off. I love the quote by Jonathan Parnell, a pastor. He says, the great sadness of this scene wasn't so much the rows of product and price gouging, but that all this left no room for the Gentiles and outcasts to come to God. The real reason why Jesus was ticked off in this story is because before he could even get to the temple, he was supposed to find a bunch of Gentiles who were outcasts, who were not good enough, whose lives were messy, who didn't have all the answers. But for some reason, they'd been drawn into the presence of God, and they were trying to get into the presence of God and pray, but there was no room for them because the religious people had set up shop and were selling things. That ticked Jesus off. So let's just insert this into a modern-day context, okay? We don't sell things here on most weeks for you to come into church. But if Jesus were to walk into church today, he would look for the misfits, the outcasts, and those who don't belong. And would he find them in the local church? If Jesus, he's in heaven, I know he watches things and he watches over us and he hears us and he loves when we sing and worship and he's a part of things, his spirit is here. But if Jesus were literally to come back and walk through our church services, he would look for the misfits and the outcasts and the messy people. And would he be able to find them in our church? Or if we set up shop, and if we kicked out all the messy people, and if we said, hey, you have to look a certain way before you come here, and you have to act a certain way before you come here, and you need to get your stuff together because only the holiest of holy peoples can come into the temple area. Anyone with any kind of sin or issues or baggage, you get your junk together outside of the temple, but when you come into the temple, you better have a perfect life because only perfect people are welcome in here. Or would Jesus walk through and say, you know what, there's a lot of people with a lot of issues, and I love it. I love that they're safe and that they're welcome to come to a place. It ticks Jesus off when religious people make it difficult for outcasts to come to God. It ticks Jesus off when religious people make it difficult for outcasts to come to God. So, let me just talk to you about what this means for you. Because this isn't just a pastor's job or a church's job. This is a Christian. This is a you job. And one of the things that becomes really difficult, the longer that you are a Christian, the more easy it is to forget about what it was like to visit a church before you believed. And if you've been in the church for years, maybe you've just totally forgotten what it's like. But if you've just started coming to church, if you've only been for a few months or even a year, you remember how awkward and how weird and how terrifying it could be to walk into a place where you didn't know exactly what they believed. You just knew that it was different than how you lived your life. And you were nervous before you walked in, and you didn't know what you were going to find. And so often in the church world, we forget that every Sunday is somebody's first Sunday. We forget. We get used to and accustomed to things, and we like things to make us feel comfortable, and we like things to fit in a certain way, and we get so excited that we still have the cinnamon rolls and the muffins out there, and the coffee's great, and as long as that's good, I'm good to go, and I'm happy, and I come in here, and I have my service, and as long as I laugh a little bit and get a little bit challenged, and as long as the music is on par, then I'm good to go, and I walk out here and don't even think that today is somebody's first Sunday. And the problem with forgetting that today is somebody's first Sunday is that eventually you stop focusing on what really made Jesus upset. And what really made Jesus upset was that Christians, people who are followers of God, weren't remembering the outcasts. So in your life, if you come to church week after week after week after week, month after month, year after year, and you never invite anyone to come with you and bring someone along with you, eventually what we do in here, eventually the newness wears off. And eventually Christians start saying things like, oh, it's not deep enough for me, it doesn't challenge me enough, it doesn't hit all of my needs, and I get that, I've been there before. But if you want to keep what happens in here fresh, then you've got to look at it with a new set of eyes. And the only way to do that is to bring someone who is an outcast, a misfit, someone who does not belong. And when they come and they sit next to you, you will relook at everything that we do. You will look at the cinnamon rolls and say, why are we short on cinnamon rolls? Somebody get the cinnamon rolls out here. I have a friend. I've been telling him for weeks about the cinnamon rolls. Get me more cinnamon rolls. Why is the coffee not completely warm? Like, it doesn't make sense. My friend, I've been begging my friend, my family member to get here. Why isn't everything on par? And I see this. When you invite someone, I get the most random and weird texts and Facebook messages from people. Seriously, you guys start getting worried about things. Rob, you're not talking about money, are you? I'm bringing a guest. I never talk about money. We haven't done sermons on money, and yet it's in your mind. You're afraid. I finally got my friend. Do not let this be the week that you talk about money. Rob, you're not doing anything weird, are you? Like, you're wearing a shirt and everything, right? Everything's going to be okay. I've got a friend coming, and I want everything to be perfect because I'm now seeing things through the eyes of Jesus, and I want it to be perfect for them. Because there's got to be a space for those who don't know God to come and experience Him. There's got to be. But when Christians set up shop and only think about ourselves, we push out the outcasts and the misfits and those that don't belong. And that really ticks Jesus off. I love being a part of a church where I get to experience some stories and some things that just have happened, some things where God does and moves. And I absolutely love it. And one of my favorite stories is a story that involves one of our founding members. There was about 50-some of us that started Next Level Church. And we were a Sunday night church, and we met for 2 years for Sunday nights, and for 2 years we prayed for God to give us a building. And for 2 years, I won't embarrass them because they're in the service, but her name rhymes with him, and her husband's name rhymes with Arlie. And I don't want to give it away or embarrass them, but for 2 years... M invited Arlie to come to church, and what Arlie said was that he couldn't make it because of his work schedule to a Sunday night service, but as soon as we became a Sunday morning service, Arlie would come to church. So for 2 years, she invited and talked, and for 2 years, he couldn't come because of his schedule, and no one foresaw that God was actually going to give us this church building. And I remember after the service where I announced that God gave us a church building, everyone was excited, everyone was on like another level, everyone was just like, holy wow, this is incredible what God has done, I can't believe he's given us a church building, this is so exciting. But I saw him, after the service, and I said, hey, is everything okay? And she said, you know, I'm a little bit nervous about going home, because for about 2 years, my husband has said that when we go to Sunday morning, he's going to come to church, and I just don't know, how he's going to respond. I don't know what's going to happen when I tell him, because I've really been wanting him to come to church. So she came home, and she told him, and his response was, I guess I don't have any excuses anymore. I guess I'll start going to church. Yeah. Here's a part of the story, though, that you don't know. When I get to be a part of hearing your prayer requests and hearing how you really want your friends and family to come and they show up, like it is a really big deal to me to see them. And on the first Sunday that I saw this guy, whose name rhymes with Arlie, the first time that I saw him sitting in the service, I literally wanted to break out in tears in the middle of the talk. Because we had done everything that we could to make sure that if he comes, it's going to be an awesome Sunday. And if he comes, he might say, I'm only going to give you one shot. I'm only going to give you one chance, and that's it. But if he comes, we want it to be so good and so friendly and so welcoming and accepting that he says, you know, I don't even know if I agreed with everything, but I want to come back. And now we've been in the building for a year, and the guy whose name rhymes with Arlie doesn't miss. In fact, he's often in the parking lot and gets here way earlier than any of you, and he helps set up our signs, and he's really plugged in. And it still sometimes brings me to tears when I see Arlie. It's not his name, but it still brings me to tears when I see him in the service. Why? Because for months and years, we've tried to work and said, hey, listen, if you're only going to give us one shot, we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that this is a place where you can come and feel welcome, where you can know that, yep, we want Christians to go deeper in their faith, and yep, we're going to challenge the mess out of Christians, and yep, we're going to really try to do everything we can to make sure that we speak in a way that uplifts Christians and challenges Christians, but this is going to be a safe place where misfits and outcasts and those who do not believe and do not belong can come and can experience the presence of God. Because here's the thing, not everyone's going to love church, and not everyone's going to love God, and not everyone that you invite is going to like what happens in here, and not everyone that you invite is going to come to church, and not everyone that you pray for is even going to be open to it. But somebody is, and God's going to be doing something in someone's heart, and you might be the right person that gets to invite them to a relationship with Jesus. And when they come, we want to be prepared. So here's the application. This is what you do, because this is not a me sermon. This is not a staff, next level staff. This is a us together. This is the application. I'd like for you to think about what you can do to help outsiders feel welcome in the church, and then do your part. What can you do? Because, hey, listen, if it's not your friend or family member who's come with you on this Sunday, it's somebody's. And so what can you do? What part do you play to make sure that this is a place where Jesus wouldn't get ticked off, where he could walk in and say, yeah, there's some misfits here. There's some people who are outcasts. There's some people who don't belong, and I love it. I wouldn't have it another way. So think about what you can do to help outsiders feel welcome in the church, and then do your part. I believe with all my heart, going back to John, if you follow after Jesus, you will have a heart, you will live for him. And this is an instance where Jesus got ticked off. And why was he ticked off? Was he ticked off because they were selling something? No, he was ticked off because their selling was pushing out the Gentiles, the misfits, the outcasts. So may we have a heart after Jesus. Would you guys pray with me? God, thank you so much for God, just speaking life through even the times where you got upset and angry. And God, would you help us to learn what we need to learn? Would you help us to know how to have a heart for the things that you care about? Would you break our hearts for the things that break yours? God, we just ask that you would help us to see people the way that you see them, and that we would find ways, find people that you would place this week, people in our lives that we could love. And God, even if they never come to next level, that's not even the goal. The goal is that they come to you. And so would you give us opportunities to tell people about your love? And God, would you stir in us a mindset, an understanding that every Sunday is somebody's first Sunday? And will we do everything we can to make sure that everything lines up perfectly so that they can experience you? We love you, Lord, and we thank you, God, for what you're doing in our church and in our lives. We ask all this in Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.